This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. One week, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be saying aloha from Hawaii. Week zero is nearing. I saw a bunch of people that I know, Kelly Stewart, Chris Williams, on their flights over to Dublin, Ireland, maybe already in Ireland, and we will have a top 25 week zero showdown between Iowa State and Kansas State over at Aviva Stadium. Four FBS versus FBS games in week one. We also have UNLV against Idaho State. So we're getting close. I say it every episode. It's technically true every episode, but got a great show for you today. Looking forward to talking to Bill Conley from ESPN, someone that we reference a lot in the gambling space, creator of SP Plus. His returning production metric is certainly something that we discussed a lot here on this podcast. And interesting, he let us know that Clemson is, of course, number one in the country in returning production, but his numbers may be not as high as you would have think on Clemson. So a lot with Bill Conley coming up here in just a little bit. We have some best bets I want to get to. I added two futures bets to my portfolio this week. Maybe I was a little bored, just wanted to add a little bit more. But I did, by the way, add two futures to the card after talking to Adam Burke a week ago. Liberty plus 115 to win Conference USA. And I also went over 6.5 wins on North Texas. That was something that I know our guy Duck, Joshua Nunn, over at Action talked about a little bit. And that was also some team that Adam Burke discussed. So added a couple bets there, but two more to get to here in just a moment. Just a reminder, hit us with a 5-star review and a little rating, a little review as well. We talked about our listener giving us a little constructive criticism last week, Scuba, saying, hey, can we get a little more G5 in our life? And hopefully we satisfied Scuba's itch. We got also a funny memory in our mentions. 5 stars during a Thursday episode last year with humans, Tim kept calling Matt by a different name. I think I did slip and call him JVT once or twice. Finally, Matt had enough and started calling you Tom. Crack me up, and I still think about it, and now I call you Tom. Well, you can call me whatever you want as long as you give us a 5-star review, which Uncle Scat did. So much appreciated there. So please keep them rolling. The 5-star reviews have been awesome, and let's keep the momentum going as, once again, we will have 3 episodes every week for you once the college football season starts. Of course, the Thursday episode that I know you guys love so much, me and Matt running through our cards and running through the games ahead. Matt Humans will be with me out in Hawaii. As we had a question come in via social media, what are the air times for the shows in Hawaii? Well, it'll be 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern time, 1 to 5 p.m. Hawaii time on Friday the 22nd. That'll be a show that I'll be hosting solo. Humans is going to stop by. A handful of great guests we're lining up right now. We'll be from the press box at Hawaii Stadium. And then on Saturday, we will have a special VSiN College Football tailgate show starting at 1 p.m. Eastern time, getting ready for the college football season, some looks at week zero, but really a big preview show at 1 p.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Hawaii time. We will be outside at a hotel in Hawaii with some great backdrops there. That'll be a show with me and humans. So 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday the 23rd. So you can have a little dual screen going. You can have Iowa State and Kansas State happening on one screen, Matt and myself happening on another. Just a reminder, as always, we are on Sirius XM channel 158, YouTube TV as well, VSiN.com, VSiN Pro gets you access to that. And if you have never tried a VSiN Pro subscription, well, how about check us out for $9.99. You get our NFL betting guide, our college football betting guide, and access to everything we have to offer, betting splits, and all of our best bets. It'll take you through week one of the NFL season and a couple of weeks of the college football season. So $9.99, check us out and see what we have to offer for you. Speaking of best bets, I want to get to a couple here. Alabama earlier this week officially named Ty Simpson as their starting quarterback, and really shouldn't come as a big surprise, even though there's a lot of excitement, I think, about the future there. I think Keelan Russell could be a guy that we see in packages as the year goes on. Five-star recruit, really unique player, and I think Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer could certainly utilize him in some unique packages. Let's start with the negatives. They lost three games that they had no business losing a year ago. That is Alabama. They should not have lost to Vanderbilt, as they were north of a 3-touchdown favorite in that game. They should not have gotten absolutely spanked by Oklahoma as a 2-touchdown favorite. And they shouldn't have lost their bowl game to Michigan as north of a 2-touchdown favorite. Kalen DeBoer and company lost three games last year as 14-point favorites or more. Is that concerning? Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you got to win the games you're supposed to. Look, we can criticize James Franklin, big game James, all we want. The struggles that he's had historically against top 10 teams. The facts are, 4-20, I believe, all time against top 10 teams. But he's kind of falling into the Brian Kelly at Notre Dame phase where he just wins games that he's supposed to win. Doesn't lose bad games, but doesn't really win the big games. So is that a worry about Kalen DeBoer? I really don't think so, but it's a concern. You can't lose those games like you did last year. I just love this roster. I really do. And at wide receiver, you bring back Bernard. Ryan Williams, if Jeremiah Smith was in the NFL, would be talked about more because Ryan Williams is that good. I think you could make an argument it's 1A, 1B, probably realistically 1-2, Smith and then Williams. Williams is an absolute beast. And they have him coming back. They have Bernard coming back. The offensive line should be one of the best offensive lines in the country. When you look at the big boys there at the tackle position, Caden Proctor is probably going to be a first-round pick. So you've got that going for you. Defense doesn't really lose anybody. And if you look at my guy Brett Ciancia, pick six previews, or Phil Steele, let's look real quickly at how they rank the defense. Brett Ciancia, pick six previews, number 2 D-line, Alabama. Phil Steele, number 6 D-line, Alabama. Linebackers, Phil Steele, number 10, Alabama. Brett, a little higher, number 2. Secondary, Phil Steele, Alabama, 2. Brett has them at 6. Defense, going to be nasty. I believe in Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer. And I look at this team. I look at this roster. Disappointing season a year ago. And if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, the world would be a better place. If they beat Oklahoma as a 2-touchdown favorite, or they beat Vanderbilt as a 23-24-point favorite, they're going to the playoff a year ago. The schedule has its landmines, no doubt. At Georgia, at Missouri. Missouri will come in, coming off a bye. At South Carolina. Home to LSU. Home to at Auburn. And home to Tennessee. And you got to throw in Vanderbilt, too, because they do play Vanderbilt. It's a very challenging schedule. One of the more difficult schedules in the country. If they go 10-2 this year, they're going to the playoff. I see a couple losses on there, but I believe in this team. I believe in Kalen DeBoer. And I don't know if you're buying low on Kalen DeBoer. Maybe you are because of the losses they had a year ago. But with what is returning, and if Ty Simpson can hit, and that's a big if. Look, we've talked about it ad nauseum this offseason. The 6 teams that are favored, 6 of the 8 teams that are favored to go to the playoff have a question at the quarterback position. The only 2 that don't, Clemson with Cade Klubnik, Penn State with Drew Aller. Ty Simpson's a question. He's also a 5-star recruit. And Ryan Grubb let us know, and look, of course, Ryan Grubb, after they name him the starter, is going to say positive things, but he said he's only thrown 1 interception this whole fall camp against one of the best secondaries in all of football. I really like this Alabama team to make the playoff. Okay, so what does that mean from a price standpoint? Good question. A couple of shops out there have them at minus 180. I think that's a palatable price. Now, last year we got a little funky on a future. We did a little crossover with the NFL, and we had Oregon to make the playoff paired up with the Eagles to win the NFC East. I think the price was like plus 138 when we gave it out on the podcast. I'm going to do it again, and maybe I'm getting too cute, but at FanDuel, you can pair Alabama, which I believe is minus 184 to make the playoff, with the Buffalo Bills to win the AFC East at minus 280. There are some shops that have the Bills as high as minus 375 to win that division. This is not an NFL podcast. I know there are some folks at VSiN that have talked about maybe some regression coming for the Bills. I just don't believe in anyone else in that division. The Patriots are on the up. Dolphins seem to be on the decline. The Jets are the Jets. Bills minus 280. Bama to make the playoffs, minus 184, it's plus 109. I think I'm also going to lay a little minus 180 at Circa on Alabama to make the playoff too, in case somehow the Bills kind of screw up or Josh Allen gets hurt. I don't know. Hard knocks curse, whatever it may be. But however you want to play it, I really think Alabama's playing in the playoff this year. I love the roster. And if Ty Simpson is a solid quarterback, and you'll hear from Bill Conley. By the way, Bill Conley, if you respect his numbers, has Alabama number two in SP Plus, only behind Ohio State. So that's one bet. The second bet, a little bit of a longer shot. And I was looking at my portfolio and all the bets we've given out here on the show. And we've got a really long shot, obviously, in Devin Dampier to win the Heisman Trophy. Man, that would be sweet. But outside of that, you know, we've got the Notre Dame ticket from the Westgate Superbook, 30-1 to win the title. More on that later in the show after Bill Conley with the quarterback situation there in South Bend. Some differing reports out there. But I wanted a playoff ticket and a longer one. And I know, who's going to be this year's Indiana? Nobody. Nobody's going to be 100 or 200 to 1 to make the playoff, in my opinion. But a team that I just keep kind of circling back to and I think has some high upside is a team and a coach that you actually heard from on this podcast feed. And that's Jed Fish and the Washington Huskies. Year two of the Jed Fish era up there in the Pacific Northwest. And listening back to the Jed Fish interview, I got a little extra excited about Damon Williams. And I think this kid could be really, really special. And when you think about the success that Jed Fish had with Jaden Delora and then Noah Fifita, and now some of the early returns on a young man like Damon Williams at the quarterback position, could this Washington team pull some upsets at home? We know how hard it is to play in Seattle up at that stadium. It is one of the better home field advantages we've seen in college football. Now, they got to figure out how to go on the road and win. That is certainly something they definitely do. But Damon Williams, as a full-time starter, started two games last year, started against Oregon, and then was dynamite against Louisville. Unique talent, and you bring back Jonah Coleman in that backfield who rushed for over 1,000 yards a year ago. I just think this Washington team's a sleeper. And I really think about the schedule. They get Ohio State, and they get Oregon at home. Can you split that? Can you pull off an upset against either Oregon or Ohio State? If you do, now you've got a really big feather in your cap. Can we get to 10-2? That's the concern. You got to go to Michigan, a team that I think will be very much improved. You got to go to Wisconsin, a team I think that will be down but desperate maybe for a win on November 8th. You host Illinois. Can you go 2-1 against Michigan, Illinois, and Wisconsin? 5 of your 9 Big Ten games are at home. You don't play Penn State, but you do play Ohio State and Oregon, but you get both of them at home. Can you avoid losing to Washington State and what will be their Super Bowl? It's a little revenge spot, obviously, for Washington. They'll be in Pullman for that game. At plus 950 at BetMGM and a couple of other shops, I believe Circa's at that price too, maybe Westgate. I thought it was worth a little sprinkle. So there you go. Two bets for me. Alabama to make the playoff, paired them up with Buffalo to win the AFC East. That's plus 109. If you want to just lay the $1.80, wouldn't be against that. I probably will do that myself. And then a longer shot, Washington to reach the college football playoff, plus 950. So two extra bets or two new bets we threw in. I want to do an update on a best bet that we discussed last Thursday, and then I gave it out on the VSiN weekend morning line this past weekend. And also an update with some quarterback positions. We'll do that later. But Bill Conley coming up on the other side of the break. Just a reminder, folks, as I mentioned already, we are hitting the road and we're going to paradise. Broadcasting live from Hawaii with special editions of VSiN Primetime. Once again, Friday the 22nd. And the College Football Tailgate Show, Friday, August 23rd, getting you ready for week 0. It's all presented by Nahaku, Hawaii's finest jewelers. Proudly sharing the spirit of aloha since 1924, discover an incomparable collection of Hawaiian and island lifestyle jewelry featuring unique designs crafted with Hawaiian gold, pearls, and rare gemstones. Nahuku's timeless pieces capture the beauty, tradition, and spirit of the islands, perfect for a special gift or a personal keepsake. They have tons of locations all over Hawaii and on the mainland as well, a couple in Vegas, a couple on the East Coast. Check it out, Nahaku, Nahoku.com. And don't miss out our live shows from the islands, which will be brought to you by Nahaku right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. All right, quick break on the other side. Bill Conley from ESPN.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, a man that I reference quite a bit here on the podcast because of his numbers that he puts out there, Bill Conley joins us, ESPN.com. Great insight from him, numerically, SB Plus, something that is referenced all the time when it comes to college football. So, Bill, appreciate you jumping on. We're right here. We're on the doorstep of the college football season coming out. You've also got a book that we could talk about here that, you know, if you haven't written enough over there at ESPN.com, you wrote up a book as well. We'll talk about a little bit later here. But I want to start with just returning production numbers are something that is referenced so much, especially in the betting sphere, Bill. How much have you tweaked it and what has your formula been incorporating the portal over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, every year we get kind of a new set of data with in the transfer heavy era, so to speak, and kind of how teams respond in that regard. I really, honestly, what my approach has been is still mostly the same as what it was all along. And just that, you know, if a guy transfers to your school, you get his yards. Like if he's a quarterback, his passing yards from last year are plugged into the returning production formula, numerator and denominator. So, that's what I started doing when, you know, teams were averaging like 3 transfers per season or whatever. And now it's like 15, but it seems to still have created a pretty solid, base for projections doing it that way.
You know, it was funny, and, you know, we're going to kind of bounce all over the place because Bill, by the way, has done write-ups for every single conference. Check them out. They're essential to preparing for the college football season. And when we were writing up our college football betting guide at VSiN, Bill, something I mentioned about Boise State was, you know, I was not expecting to go into this year betting on Boise to win this conference, but you look at the numbers and Boise State, you would think with the loss of someone like Ashton Gentry, best player in school history, runner up in the Heisman, okay, they're going to have a massive dip in returning production. But what shocked me when I looked at your numbers and then when you start diving in, a team like Boise State actually is amongst the best teams in the country in returning production this year.
Yeah, and part of that has to do with the fact that typically rushing yards, losing a bunch of rushing yards doesn't correlate to regression the next year. There's, you know, that's one of the positions that doesn't carry ton of weight in the formula. It's, you know, quarterback, offensive line, you know, receiver and DBs tend to be a little heavier in that regard. So that certainly helped them. And, you know, losing an otherworldly talent is going to hurt you, whether he's a running back or not. But I do think Boise State, number one, yeah, like you said, they bring back just a ton elsewhere. Your quarterback, most of the offensive line, they had a ton of guys. They had to play a ton of guys on the offensive line last year. Most of them are back this year. Secondary, super experienced. D-line lost a couple D tackles, especially, and Hassanine, the pass rusher, but they still return a number of guys who were pretty disruptive last year. So, yeah, I mean, it just, you know, if we focus on what they have and not what they lost, it's still pretty easily the most talented roster in the Mountain West, especially if, you know, guys like Dubar and Sire Gaines, especially Sire Gaines, you know, the redshirt freshman running back who looked kind of as good as Junty really, really early in the season and then got hurt. If that small sample was a real thing, then they're still going to have probably the best running backs in the conference as well. So UNLV's clear outlier in the Mountain West, just because we know so little about them. But Boise State is very, very talented still.
Yeah, and that's what I came away. And we, you know, people who listen to this podcast know that we bet them to win this conference at, you know, I thought was a pretty bargain price at minus 125 not too long ago. But if you got paid a dollar every time someone in the media referenced that Clemson is number one in returning production, I think you'd be a millionaire, Bill. I know I've done it a bunch. And I joked when we started these podcasts back up in the offseason, I think our first episode was May 1st, it's been a Clemson love affair. And look, I'm part of it. I bet them to win the ACC. So the clear and outlier, not outlier, the most obvious thing from your numbers is that they're number one in the country in returning production. But what I found interesting was that when the polls came out and they came in at number five, Clemson did, your numbers, the SP Plus numbers, aren't actually as high as the pollster. Yeah. So as much as the returning production is through the roof and number one in the country, you do have some questions about this Clemson team.
I mean, the major question I have is, you know, they're projected to improve just about as much as anybody in the country, but they were 22nd in SP Plus last year. They've averaged last 4 years, their average ranking's 18.5. Last three, it's 20.3. So being number one in returning production is good, but number one this year, that's just I think they're right at about 80%. Usually that's like 10th or 15th in returning production, but just everybody lost is losing such a higher level of transfers, plus all the most of the COVID eligibility guys left. And so bar is kind of lower there. They're not projected to improve as much for being number one in returning production as is typical. And then also, yeah, they're still going to improve a lot, but they just haven't been an elite team since 2020. And so I kind of like that. You know, we're going to find out exactly what Dabo Swinney's capable of building this year. But it's not, they have not dropped any real hints that they're a team capable of like a top five level performance. So maybe they are, maybe those young receivers really do break through and they actually start trying for big plays occasionally. They didn't do it until the last game of the year last year, and it was when they were behind already. But that, you know, explosiveness has been an issue for them for a while, but you know, whatever. Like I get yelled at by Clemson fans a lot, and most of it is just like, I'm not rooting for this. Like, I'm not like, I don't have a vendetta here. It's just that you guys haven't been elite in a long time, and you guys were only so good last year. And without turnovers, like, they wouldn't have even made the ACC title game or won it. So I do think they have a lot further to climb to get back into a like being in a genuinely elite team. But who knows? Maybe they'll do it.
You know, Bill, it's funny because Clemson has been a team that has gotten, I think, the benefit of the doubt. Once again, for me, I bet them almost right away this offseason. It was my first bet of the offseason, was them to win the ACC. They're national title odds have cratered in a good way, going from around 20 to 1 down to 10 to 1. Good. But a team that I think I would say is polarizing this upcoming season is Illinois. And there does seem to be a disconnect between bettors and pollsters. And, you know, in our VSiN guide, Matt Humans and Paul Stone, they collaborated and put together their top 25. Illinois wasn't in it. You put out your top 25, you know, your rankings, I should say, SP Plus, Illinois, not a top 25 team. So there seems to be a ton of momentum for Brett Bielema's squad. But I think what's interesting about Illinois, and we can dive into this as well, is, you know, they were pretty fortunate last year in a handful of games. So what are your numbers on Illinois? Because it seems to be a divide from perception and reality a little bit on this Illinois team.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a team kind of like this where, you know, you win a bunch of close games. Well, I mean, they're fourth in return of production. So if you just start with, hey, they won 10 games last year and they return as much as just about anybody, that sounds like a great team. You know, maybe the confidence and everything that they built last year, maybe that all translates. But bottom line is they won a ton of close games. They beat Rutgers because of the strangest clock management kind of weirdness at the end of the game that we saw all season. They beat South Carolina by 4, which was nice, but they beat Purdue by 1, the worst team in power conference. They beat them by 1 with that huge blown lead. They beat Kansas by 6. They beat Nebraska by 7. They played Penn State and Oregon and lost to them by a combined 59-16. They improved. They finished, I think, 31st in SP Plus last year. That's a humongous improvement over 75th. It's just not, you know, top 15. So it's kind of like Clemson in that, yeah, they're projected to improve this year, but they're starting from a lower point than I think their record alone kind of suggests they should last year.
You know, on the flip side, Bill, you've got in your most recent article comparing SB Plus to the polls, which I think is an important thing. And a lot of my listeners obviously know that polls are polls, and it's almost an opportunity at times to kind of use it against the polls from a betting standpoint. But a team that you're very high on based off of your numbers, and it's actually one that I opened up the podcast talking about, we got news that Ty Simpson's going to be the starter down there in Tuscaloosa. I know there's a lot of excitement about Keelan Russell. Could he be used in some packages, the five-star freshman? But this roster in its totality heading into this year, how do your numbers flush out Alabama, and how different are you from what the current perception is on Alabama being a top 10 team, but maybe not a top 5 team?
Yeah, they're what, eighth in the AP and coaches polls. They're second in SP Plus, which honestly, I don't know if I'd have them second if I was a pollster. But I mean, I get it. Basically, last year, their high points last year, that LSU, the win over LSU, the win over Missouri, although that was, I know Missouri's quarterback was injured, so they maybe got a little too much credit for that. They were so highly rated heading into that late collapse that they only fell so far when they collapsed offensively late in the year. So, they finished sixth on offense because they had been so high before then. They finished eighth on defense. Their defense returns just about everybody, really, especially compared to what Alabama, especially compared to what such a good recruiting team typically returns. Their defense is absolutely loaded. I'd be shocked if it wasn't a top five unit, top five or six. And then on offense, the offensive line is one of the few in the SEC that has a healthy amount of last year's guys returning. A whole bunch of teams at or near the top of the rankings are kind of hitting a major reset on the offensive line, which makes things interesting. And of course, you know, Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard, a lot of yards in the receiving corps. So that's all good. If you tell me right now that Ty Simpson is just a good quarterback, like not Heisman, just a good, like a above average to a good SEC quarterback, like they don't really have a weakness here. So even if second's a little bit too high, I do think eighth's probably a little bit too low. We're just kind of remembering that taste we got at the very, very end of last season, but now they've changed quarterbacks and offensive coordinators. So maybe that doesn't apply anymore.
You know, Bill, I don't have any bets yet on Michigan this year, but the more I kind of dive into the Wolverines, the more I get interested in them. I don't know if that's maybe bet them week two when they go down to Oklahoma. Obviously, they've got a quarterback competition going on right now. It seems like Bryce Underwood, the very highly touted freshman, is going to be the guy. But the more you think about it, and your numbers point this out, you know, this is a team that if they had mediocre quarterback play, what are they, you know, a year ago? So is Michigan a team that maybe is a little underrated heading into this year?
I think a little. I'm pretty concerned about the offense. They're 14th in the polls and 8th in SP Plus. I'd kind of lean towards 14th myself, just because the offense really is still a mystery. Not only the quarterback, which, you know, they really did prove last year. They beat Ohio State and Alabama with basically their quarterback position actively working against them. So, I mean, clearly the ceiling was still pretty high for the defense, for the offensive line, things like that. But obviously, you know, quarterback is a mystery. And also, like, the skill core is completely unproven. I really don't know what they have. Justice Haynes, the Alabama transfer running back, could be very good. Maybe, sure. I love that they got a kid from Princeton, Volker, who averaged nearly 6 yards per carry. Great. But that's not quite the level that they're looking for. So, yeah, I don't know if they have enough in the skill core to help out the young quarterback, but I do think the defense, you know, people I think are assuming the defense falls off because they lost Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham. Well, they have Rashawn Benny. They have most of the, like, they have just about every linebacker, and including a couple who had really nice disruption numbers. Secondary, we'll see. They will have to probably rely on at least one of their transfers to hold up, but getting Rod Moore back, the safety, I think he's healthy now. That should be, I think the safety holds up. I think the defense is top 10 again. So, yeah, any improvement the offense makes becomes improvement Michigan's makes, and they were already pretty good at it by the end of last year. So that's the case. But I do think, you know, while SP Plus has them quite a bit higher, I think the pollsters probably properly rated them on that one.
You know, when the FPI came out, you and a handful of your colleagues over at ESPN wrote a column about, you know, who's overrated, who's underrated, and you put in Texas, and I'm sure that grabbed a lot of attention from folks down in the Lone Star State. You know, they come in at number one, but they're an underdog in week one. And I thought I saw the stat the first time in the AP poll history that the number one team in the country is an underdog in week one. But you actually, the way that your line comes out, it's not a massive discrepancy, but you do see a little bit of value on Ohio State in week one. What are your numbers right now on Ohio State and Texas?
Yeah, it's Buckeyes by 5.5 once you apply. Ohio State's 3 points ahead in these initial SP Plus projections, and then, you know, home field advantage as well. So that's about a field goals difference with the line. I think the thing with Texas, obviously, I don't have an arch effect programmed in the algorithm. And I think what people see in Texas is, it's Arch Manning's time. We've been talking about this guy for 5 years now. It's his third year in college. It's his turn to start, and he's going to be amazing. And therefore, Texas is number one. And that could absolutely be true. Things I've written a lot this offseason, though, is if Arch is anything less than the best quarterback in the country, if he's merely, you know, very good, but sometimes inconsistent. He did make some mistakes last year. He got baited into mistakes, especially against Louisiana Monroe. You know, if he's anything less than amazing, well, the fact that they lost some really, really important receivers, the fact that they're basically hitting reset on both lines, those things could end up mattering. And so, you know, it's a lot of pressure here on Arch, not just being a Manning in general, but I mean, they're number one because of him. It's not really justifiable unless you think Arch is going to be spectacular. So that was kind of the discrepancy I saw there. Maybe he is. Like, I could buy in very quickly if he puts up, you know, good numbers against Ohio State, but that's kind of what I'm waiting to see. And I think the pollsters voting him number one kind of assumed it was going to happen.
Yeah, and then what do you make of Ohio State this year, Bill? You do have them, SP Plus has them at one. You know, it's funny, I was talking to your colleague Ian Fitzsimmons out here at Big Ten Media Day, and he's very bullish on Ohio State, but there are other people that I respect that have their questions about the Buckeyes. The schedule's certainly challenging when you think about you have to play Texas and Penn State. You get both of them at home, haven't beaten Michigan in, you know, 4 years. Questions at quarterback. It seems like it'll be Julian Sayin, but Lincoln Kienholz is still kind of hanging out there, you know, waiting in the wings. What did your numbers spit out on Ohio State this year?
Well, they start off number one. I think the most interesting thing to me was that they're like 12 teams within a touchdown. Like, there's really...
Is that normal for your numbers?
No, it's really not. This is a lower... Okay. The bar is lower. Well, and I realized the other day when Texas was number one in the AP poll, I thought they were overrated, of course. But then I realized, like, no matter who they spit out, I was probably going to think they were overrated because it feels like we've just got a bunch of threes and fours this year. No number one. Mm. Which, honestly... is great if you just like a wild, interesting national title race. So I'm all for it. With Ohio State, you know, when you start off by having maybe the two best players in the country, that's a good starting point. And Ryan Day really has, for all of his Michigan troubles, he took the mantle from Urban Meyer and kind of raised the bar very, very quickly. And so there's a lot I like about them just because they're Ohio State and you know how talented they are and their upside's ridiculous. I am very, you know, the combination of a young quarterback, whether it's Sayan or Keenholz, neither of them have played anything really. So you start there and you add two new coordinators. One of them, Brian Hartline, I don't think he was calling plays 2 years ago the first time he was coordinator, but I did think it was interesting that once Ryan Day decided to give up play calling, he went and hired somebody else. Hartline's known as one of the best recruiters in the game, but this is a big step for him. And when you've got Jeremiah Smith, maybe he'll find out the play calling super easy, but young quarterback, new running backs, new offensive line, like that is a lot. Matt Patricia, I mean, the only line I could think to say in my Ohio State preview is the last time he genuinely performed well in a job was like 2016. So, I mean, I realize he has all the great influence in the world, and maybe that'll all translate. And the Lord knows he's got a lot of talent to work with, but it was still an odd hire. You went from having the best defensive coordinator in college football in Jim Knowles to, a guy who hasn't necessarily been good at a job in 9 years. So there's a lot of opportunity for regression there, but the upside's extremely obvious at the same time.
Well, you mentioned Jim Knowles, and you know, I don't know if it's fair, but I think a lot of us are saying, look, Penn State has all the goods. I did a podcast in State College recently, and I said, if not now, when? It's all there. You know, you got the coaches, you got the quarterback coming back, you got the best running back duo in college football. You went out and you addressed the wide receiver position at the portal. So where are you on this Penn State team? I know you have them at 3 in SP Plus, but as you alluded to, they're only, 1.8 points behind Ohio State. Do you think this Penn State team has the goods to do it, to win a national title?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. It is funny. I mean, he's managed, James Franklin has managed to eliminate uncertainty in a way that I don't think we've ever seen before in terms of, they never get upset and they never pull upsets. these last, I think, 3 years now, the only time they lost as a favorite was when they were like a half point favorite against Notre Dame in the semifinals. And then in the bowl against Ole Miss the year before, where that was, enough weird circumstances. I think we can write that one off. And otherwise they've won every single game where they're favored and they've lost every single game where they weren't. And, that's bad if you think about them having to beat a couple super high level teams at the end of the year in a playoff. But at the same time, they're going to only probably be underdogs once this season to get to the playoff or to get to the Big Ten championship. So their odds of being in the playoff, being in the mix are really good. Combine that with the fact that they made the semis last year. Like, we know this is a really high level team. And it's funny. This race has been kind of fun to talk about just because we have a whole bunch of teams with new or young quarterbacks near the top, whole bunch of teams with offensive lines that are new, defensive lines that are new, just a whole bunch of new. But then you've got these birds in hand with Clemson, however you think of them, and Penn State returning so much of what made them good last year. So, like, obviously Abdul Carter's gone, but I love Dennis Sutton. I think they always have pass rushers. So I think they get the benefit of the doubt there. They got Zane Durant. Like, they just, they're loaded. And I do think this is a team that can, the whole premise here is that a whole bunch of teams have a shot. They're absolutely one of them. And I'm not going to, people doubt them for pretty clear reasons. I'm not too worried about them in that regard.
Bill, being such a math model based guy like yourself, and you look at how tight these teams are, when you look at the futures board, is Alabama, in your eyes, I hate the word value because it's so overused in gambling, but is Alabama the best value when it comes to the title being in that 10 to 12-1 range and their numbers being as high as they are?
Yeah, I'm pulling up the list again now, but that's obviously, I mean, you know, having Ohio State and Texas at the top, obviously I'm just looking right past that.
Sure.
Because I don't think there's a genuine favorite this year. So yeah, I mean, in that sense, you know, you eliminate them, what, Penn State and Georgia are next. Like that's, the more I doubt Georgia, the more I realize I'm actually confident in Georgia. Like, you know, every time we doubt them, you know, it turns out once again, they have the most depth in the country. They'll overcome
injuries.
Well,
you saying the word doubt right now, Bill, is going to be spun to Kirby Smart, and he's going to tell his team that Bill Conley thinks you're going 5-7.
Exactly. Like he's, you know, some coaches have to actually go out and find people saying disrespectful things. He just makes them up, but he always finds the fuel he needs. But obviously, like, I mean, I'd say plus 800 is what I'm looking at for Georgia. That's about right. Clemson, obviously, I'm skipping.
Yep.
So yeah, then you're looking at what, Alabama. You're looking at, like, Notre Dame seems about right in that regard. Everything else kind of seems right. I am, if you want to live on the edge, as I was writing my preview materials, I started to realize that I was a lot higher in on A&M than a lot of people. So that's certainly one that I'm going to watch. Like, I do my ifs list each year. Like, how many ifs does it take for me to turn your team into a national champion or a serious contender? Penn State and Alabama were at the top. They only had two. But right there among Georgia and Texas and Ohio State was A&M. Like, they have the offensive line. They return all the experience on offensive line that others don't. Their defensive line did, you know, they're going to have to rely on a couple transfers there, but the rest, and we'll see about that, but the rest of the defense is loaded. The running backs are phenomenal if healthy. I mean, they just got Reuben Owens back. Le'Veon Moss is great. I was surprised he came back. Like, they're loaded there. They're going to be a super ridiculously physical Mike Elko team, with more upside than, you know, Elko's Duke teams had. I just feel like, they're a really high kind of floor team. You know, Marcel Reed, what is his ceiling? Maybe it's not as high as others in the SEC, but I really do. Like, that's a little bit of a reach. They're down kind of ranked in the teens. They're plus 5,000. But of those kind of those light heavyweight SEC teams, I think I like them the most.
All right. I wanted to wrap with you. We only got a couple minutes left with what you kind of threw out there. And I want to start with how you pulled this together. Something that, you know, bettors love when you look at, you know, KenPom during college basketball is that luck factor, right?
Yeah.
All right. Is this team due for some positive regression or negative regression? Hey, they've won a bunch of close games, however it may be. How did you come to your numbers early this offseason, looking at some of these kind of, I don't know if you called it luck, but, you know, positive, well, however you defined it, how did you kind of come to the numbers that you gravitated with?
Yeah, it's randomness more than anything. But I like using the word luck just because it really does kind of get people kind of fired up sometimes. Nothing makes people more defensive than saying
my team is
lucky.
Not lucky.
Yeah, we were good. We were taught. We know how to recover fumbles. That's how we recovered so many more than we were supposed to. But yeah, I just wanted to, I always post at some point in the offseason, I talk about turnovers, luck and everything, and who just based on both the number of overall fumbles, how many, what percentage of those they recovered, and based on something that I found is pretty reliable is that ratio of interceptions to pass breakups. You know, that's an indicator that I don't know if a lot of people use. I've been using it for a while. Just if you had a ton of breakups, or, you know, if you dropped a bunch of interceptions, or your opponents, you know, were really good at catching interceptions that other teams, you know, and that ratio was off, that's probably going to right itself the next year. So looking at it from that perspective, James Madison, Indiana, and Clemson were the top three in turnover luck, so to speak, last year. And Indiana didn't really have any close games, so it didn't really affect their record any. But Clemson, you think back to how that SMU game started. Like, that's if they don't get a couple of just right bounces early in that game and hold on to an interception, they don't hold on to win. They don't make the ACC, they don't make the playoff, and they're not top five in the country this year. So that's they benefited from turnovers luck in a very clear way there. And at the bottom, you had a lot of bad teams. Florida State was near the bottom. Auburn was near the bottom. TCU, they had a good year and they were near the bottom. So that was something I always try to look at. And that was pretty interesting. I do look at close games. I have my second order win totals based on my post game win expectancy numbers that I always post on Thursday. That's just kind of the quick and dirty thing there is just, you know, take all the stats that go into SP Plus, all those sustainable things, basically toss them in the air and say, you know, with these stats from this game, you would have expected to win this game X percent of the time. And sometimes you win a couple like 10 percenters that you're probably not going to win the next year. Like Iowa State and Texas Tech both benefited from that. Missouri, Michigan, kind of Syracuse. And then Auburn once again was at the very bottom in that list. The other thing that I wanted to play with that it's not an SP Plus at all. I just wanted to kind of have the data set up so I could look at it next year was what I was calling lineup consistency, or, you know, how frequently was your starting lineup the same from week to week? So Penn State benefited a lot from that. Indiana again benefited. Texas benefited. None of them were really hit by injuries in a major, major level. Meanwhile, like Utah was wrecked by injuries. Florida was wrecked by injuries. And so you start to think of things in those terms. Like it was just kind of interesting. We'll see what kind of effect it has and whether I end up trying to incorporate that into next year's projections. But I just like the idea. I wanted to post it and now we'll kind of see. And that was in an early May piece. I think if you Google Bill Connolly turnovers luck or something like that, and maybe it'll come up.
Well, I wanted to hit this possible turnaround teams because I did bet Utah to win the conference. Look, yeah. It's a wide open conference. If you tell me eight teams win that conference, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think about close game losses that you pointed out, 1-5 in close games, tons of injuries. The quarterback position was a nightmare a year ago. And they go out and they do, you know, if you want to call it a poor man's Oklahoma, but they go out and they get a quarterback and his offensive coordinator to come from New Mexico. And people listening know how much I love Devin Dampier. So Utah, Auburn, who are a couple teams that you expect to have a bounce back season this year?
Yeah, that was immediately when the season ended. I said Utah's winning just flip the standings. Utah's going to win all the close games next year. I do think they have a pretty good case there. Love Beck, the offensive coordinator. Dampier, so I'm a little worried about his passing, but yeah, he runs the Beck offense very well, as long as they're not in a ton of third and longs. But yeah, I mean, some of the turnover candidates were pretty obvious. Auburn lost a ton of close games. Florida State, you know, can't be worse. So anything you look at is going to have them rebounding to some degree. FAU was another one that they might have been the single least lucky team in terms of turnovers, like they were 111th. That difference between the second order wins, they were 121st. And injury lineup stability, they were 131st. So they had nothing going for them at all last year. And you know, that'll probably right itself. So that's an interesting one. I mean, I'm not going to pick them to win the AAC or anything, but they should be quite a bit better, I think, under
Well, Zach
coach.
Kittley, gamblers know Kittley and what he did at Western Kentucky. 10-4 ATS with Bailey Zappi that year in 2021 coming in from Western Kentucky. Syracuse is a fascinating team this year, and I bet they're under 5.5. You talk about, Bill, lucky season last year, or fortunate, I guess I should say. I don't want to get Syracuse fans mad at me. We know there's a lot in the media. You also lose an NFL quarterback, an NFL running back, three wide receivers, six games away from home that are just absolutely brutal. You don't play any of the bad teams outside of Boston College and the ACC. Like, they win 10 games last year, and it seems like the program is headed in the right direction. But what do the numbers spit out for Syracuse? Because it just feels like a lot of odds are stacked against them this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. They're 99th in returning production, 129th on offense, and their offense was the big kind of breakthrough unit, and now they're starting over there. They were one of the more fortunate teams overall in terms of those factors I was just talking about, and they lost most of the reasons they were good last year. I mean, Fran Brown, the way he put together last year's team, whether they were lucky or not, they were improved significantly in his first year, and that's a good sign of what they'll be able to do moving forward. But it does feel like this is you're hitting the reset button immediately, because you're going to have like how many like two returning starters, and not necessarily a ton of success in the portal. Like, I like Steve Angeli. I'm really curious what he can do. But outside of the quarterback position, I don't know if they really added anybody genuine kind of breakthrough guys. And then the defense, like I said, the defense improved, but not, well, no, actually it didn't. It got worse last year. And now they hit reset pretty hard as well. So yeah. And their schedule, they were 56th in strength of schedule at the end of last season. They're 14th this year because they got Tennessee right out of the gate. Like you said, they get Clemson, Miami, they get at Notre Dame, at Clemson and at Miami, and at SMU. So yeah. Like just trying to piece together where a sixth
and
win
at Georgia
is going to come
from. Right, too?
And Georgia Tech's one of those teams that, I mean, who knows how injured their quarterback's going to be after about the first 2 weeks of the season, because he just likes to run into walls. But, you know, that is like the road schedule is absurd. And just trying to piece together, okay, they'll beat UConn and Colgate. You know, maybe they'll beat, you know, North Carolina at home, Boston College at home. Maybe Pitt gets you to 5, then you got to beat like Duke or somebody to get 6, basically all the toss-up games you have to win. And that's just, it doesn't usually happen that way.
All right, we'll wrap with two quick ones. I am so intrigued by, and we've talked about it a lot, and I could get nerdy with you, Southern Miss and Marshall. I know Freakier Friday is out now. It feels like this is Freaky Friday. They've just swapped bodies. So when you're numerically based like yourself, and you've got a team that won the conference with 10 wins and a dreadful team, but essentially they just brought them south. How did you figure out Marshall and Southern Miss? Because it is a unique situation in the same conference that has unfolded this year.
Yeah, literally a quarter of last year's Sun Belt title winning roster just left for the worst roster in the Sun Belt. So, in terms of grand experiments, this one's going to be fun. I feel like, SP Plus nails the teams moving down a little better than it nails the teams moving up. So the fact that Marshall's projected to fall to 99th, that makes a lot of sense. It wouldn't surprise me if they fell even further, because that was a total gut job, just a total rebuild there. But yeah, Southern Miss is going to have at least a chance. They're projected to improve, but you can only really be in projected to improve so far. So they're still just sitting there at 127 overall. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, just in terms of pure talent, they have so much more of it than they did last year. Quarterback position, I really like Braylon Braxton, the kid who ended up starting most of for Marshall down the stretch. Lots of receivers new, lots of defenders new. It's going to be interesting. I don't remember where the win total ended up being for Southern Miss, but they're going
to... It moved from 4.5 to 5.5 this offseason.
Okay, 5.5 is high. Like that's pretty aggressive, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were suddenly at least a mediocre to average Sun Belt team, because again, they just brought in half the or a quarter of the title winning roster.
All right, last one for me. We'll be out in Hawaii next week for Stanford Hawaii. We've seen a massive line move this offseason. Hawaii opened as a 2.5 point underdog. They're now a 2.5 point favorite. What are the SP numbers on Hawaii Stanford in week 0?
This is one of the bigger, there aren't many disagreements between the line and SP Plus this year. It's kind of disappointing. I like having some outliers, but Stanford Hawaii is one of them. Not that it loves Stanford by any means, but it still has them 4.5 point favorites over Hawaii. Obviously, that doesn't really look like much of a power conference roster that they're dealing with at the moment. Ben Gulbranson was just named starting quarterback. He's been around forever. He's fine. you don't see really any difference makers when you look up and down the roster, but Hawaii isn't really projected to be all that great either. So I do see kind of a toss up, but I think I would still lean towards Stanford in this.
Bill, big fan of your work. I know a lot of people listening are. Let us know real quickly about the book how we can get our hands on the book.
Forward Progress, the definitive guide to the future of college football. It's a fun title. I don't know how definitive it is.
I like the picture on the cover. I'll just say that.
Lots of linemen butts. Mike Golick Jr. liked it. He had Notre Dame on there. Nice beefy cover. It's basically a how did we get here and where are we going thing. This isn't an analytics book. It's a kind of a, state of college football kind of thing. I've been calling it half history book, half manifesto. It's more how things should be than how they will be, because I think right now we kind of know what we're looking at moving forward, and I don't love everything we're looking at. So I wanted to kind of walk through impact of conference realignment, impact of television, impact of you know, the playoff expansion and paying players, and just kind of isolate all these things that have changed all at once, and kind of what's good, what's bad, and what's most important.
Bill, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again to Bill Conley for jumping on the podcast. You could follow him, like I'm sure many of you already are doing so, at ESPN underscore Bill C. He has links there in his Twitter profile to all of his write-ups. He's got lines for week zero out and also returning production, everything you could ask for. So at ESPN underscore Bill C, make sure you check out that. Really good stuff, and appreciate it, Bill, coming on. Once again, as he mentioned, his book is Forward Progress, the Definitive Guide of the Future of College Football, and you can pre-order that right now. So thanks to Bill Conley for jumping on. Wrapping up the podcast, and I just wanted to hit on this. We continue to see under money come in on this Notre Dame-Miami game. And I talked about it briefly with Adam Burke in the earlier episode this week. And I went back and I listened to the open of Thursday's podcast a week ago. Curious, did I give this bet out when it was 54.5? I did not officially give it out on the podcast. I did give it out on both Saturday and Sunday's edition of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Man, this is a big move, and I understand it. I think Notre Dame, with this news coming out, and I know Pete Nakos, I believe it is, from On3 reported that Kenny Minchie has a slight lead over CJ Carr. I don't know if that's true or not. I've been listening to all of the Notre Dame podcasts, shocker, I know, and it sounds like it truly is a 50-50 battle right now. And one thing that I have gathered, at least from, you know, folks that I've talked to, not inside the Goog or whatever like that, but just people who cover the team, the defense has really been playing exceptionally well. And now, is that a concern about the quarterbacks? Is that exciting about the defense? Is that a little bit of both? Yeah, I'd say a little bit of both. But Circa now down to 49.5. So we were at 54.5 last Thursday when we recorded this podcast. We've seen a 5-point move to the under in this game. And once again, I bet it at 53.5. I didn't take I was hoping to get a 55, didn't come. Massive move this week on the under. And Notre Dame to me is pretty intriguing in many facets. And the reason I bet them at 30-1, I just thought it was mispriced for them to win the national championship, and kind of heard Bill Conley talking about it. I thought the upside is potentially there. But at Alabama, they named Ty Simpson the starting quarterback. They have not done that yet at Notre Dame. And maybe on Sunday, when they have a big scrimmage, they will name a quarterback early next week. It's certainly possible. Marcus Freeman has stated that they are not planning on going into the Miami game not having named a starting quarterback. So I think you'll know sooner rather than later. I have no guess. I really don't, because all along I thought it'd be CJ Carr. And you got to give a lot of credit to Kenny Minchie. This was kind of a guy that many believed was going to transfer out. He would be the odd man out because of Steve Angeli. But ultimately, Steve Angeli was told he was going to be third string, so he transfers to Syracuse. And Kenny Minchie brings a unique dynamic to the table. He's a mobile quarterback. And Mike Denbrock, certainly in his history, has had success with mobile quarterbacks. Not to say that CJ Carr can't be the guy. I think from what I've gathered, the upside of CJ Carr is higher, and the Notre Dame coaching staff recognizes that. But what I will say about Marcus Freeman is that he's not scared to just play the best player, which is what you want from your coach. And case in point, last year when Charles Jagasaw, the projected left tackle, went out, they ultimately went with a guy in Anthony Knapp at left tackle, a true freshman, to start at Texas A&M. And he started the whole season before getting hurt going into the championship game. So For Notre Dame, I still believe in their offensive line, their two-headed monster in the backfield. I think the biggest questions I have for Notre Dame, obviously the quarterback position is a concern, but do you need them to be exceptional? I think Malachi Fields, the transfer from Virginia, and Will Pauling, the transfer from Wisconsin, give them a nice 1-2 punch at the wide receiver position, in addition to Jaden Greathouse, who played his best two games in the final two games of a year ago, Jordan Faison as well. So I think you have a solid wide receiver room, not anything close to Alabama, like we talked about with, you know, Ryan Williams being the absolute superstar that he is, but a very good room there. Great running back room, potentially great offensive line, great secondary, great linebackers. Concern at the D-line, could Miami try to run the ball on them? But ultimately, that's why I think we've seen this move to 49.5 at Circa, 50.5 at other shops. I hate saying still play the under when the total has moved 4 points, but that's the way I would lean in this one. I think 51 being a key number, see if we get back there, if there's any buyback here of game week, but I understand the move. I bet that side, and we'll see if it is a low-scoring game. I did want to mention this before we get out of here. I was joking with Adam Burke because we did our long group of five preview, and then after the show concludes, almost immediately, Fresno State announced that EJ Warner, son of Kurt Warner, would be the starter there, and I had alluded to Matt Entz on the podcast saying, we don't know who the starter is going to be. Well, it is EJ Warner. So EJ Warner, the son of Kurt Warner, will be the starter there for Fresno State. Keep with the five-star reviews. It's much, much appreciated. It's so cool to see them continue to come in. As our guy Chicken5576 says, as a fellow Irish fan, keep the Notre Dame talk coming. There you go, buddy. I say to the end of the podcast, at least on this one. A couple new best bets. Thanks to Bill Conley. Thanks to Ryan as well. I've got a couple of shows scheduled to record before we head out to Hawaii, and I'm really excited about them. Once we get a little bit closer to that, I'll make an announcement here on the podcast, but we've got a pretty exciting guest who's going to be in studio with me next week. So I won't mention it yet, but very excited to sit down and record that podcast next week before we head out to the islands. As always, you can tweet me at @1TimMurray. We'll be back next week with another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.